I've never watched the weather more than I watch now, because if it's a rotten day, then there's no point in baking a lot of stuff. If it's going to be a nice Saturday, then you better have a lot of stuff because everybody's out and about.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Bakery noises, exactly. Well, my name is Susan Preston, and we're at the Village Bakery, which is in downtown Dundas.
How did you get into being a baker and the history of the establishment?
Well, 8 years ago, actually in 1998, at this time of the year, it was Easter, we opened the first store, which was just down the street at 51 King Street West. And it started out as supposed to be 2 or 3 days a week, and it was my sister and I, and it grew. We couldn't keep any stock in the store. We hired our first girl, Evelyn, who's still with me, after the first week. My sister couldn't take it after so long. It was too much for her, and so she ended up getting out. She's probably the smart one. And we hired more people and a cake decorator, and it just grew from there. And then as of October of this year, we moved down here, which is 5 times bigger than our first spot. And it's just gone on from there, and we've just expanded everything. We started out originally making squares and goodies for Christmas time and selling them in boxes. Neither she nor I had some money for Christmas, and so we did that, made our own cookies and squares and everything, and we sold them in boxes of 36 for $10, all wrapped. And I spent my last $100 that was supposed to be for my kids' Christmas presents on flour and sugar. And I thought, oh my God, what have I done? And we put signs up in a couple of hairdressing shops and sold the first 10 boxes within an hour, made back my $100, and made enough money for Christmas that year. And that was 3 years before we started the bake shop at all. And that's how it started. And it grew from there.
What are the challenges? I mean, what kind of, like, you get up early to bake, stuff like that?
There's a lot of challenges. There's a lot more than people realize. First of all, you have to worry about money and employees and making sure you got the bills and having enough stock. I've never watched the weather more than I watch now, because if it's a rotten day, then there's no point in baking a lot of stuff. If it's going to be a nice Saturday, then you better have a lot of stuff because everybody's out and about. If you're going to have a snowstorm, then you end up having to close and you've got all your equipment. It's not like putting socks on a table like in a regular clothing store. Your stuff you're going out there is perishable, and if it's not looked after, then you don't have a business. You have to get up early in the morning, and I'm often up late at night. When we first started, I slept on the freezers at night. I was here all day and all night, just trying to keep up, couldn't keep up. So now we have a big table. No, I'm kidding. But I'm at Christmas time, I had, I think it was about 10 people working here. We worked till 11:30 the night before. We were here at 3 in the morning, right after we'd gone home, enough to change your clothes, have a little rest, and we're back here at 3 in the morning for Christmas Eve. And, but it's not like that all the time. We start out 5 now at 5 o'clock in the morning. And we try to go home early if we start at 5. And then we have people that come in a little bit later and then they stay later. We bake everything from all kinds of different kinds of breads to different squares, cookies. We have pies. We have meat pies. We have beautiful cakes, from wedding cakes to birthday cakes to cakes for dogs. People have bought cakes for their dog's birthday. We've got dog biscuits. We've got a little bit of everything now. We've really expanded. We've got, I don't know how many different kinds of squares, and everything's homemade. It's all my grandmother's recipes or recipes that have been adapted from a family recipe. All the cookies are all homemade. We make all our doughs now. We've learned lots of tricks, but we've made all our doughs ahead of time, and we know enough to do that now. But all the pies are homemade with fresh fruits. We make tarts, and I don't know how many different kinds of bread. I would say it's at least 12 or so many different kinds of breads. So it's very time-consuming because it's all done by hand. Now we have the soup, and we're going to have sandwiches, but we have the soup, and that's takeout or sit at the table like you did in coffee.
Can we talk a bit about the atmosphere of the place?
It's like, fun, and if it isn't fun, we're not going to do it.
I was thinking, well, on that, we talked briefly before about just the women-centeredness of it. Can we talk a bit about that?
It's all women, and... not really, but probably to a certain extent. Almost all of the girls that work here are all mostly the ones that are supporting their families. But that's not why they're hired. They're hired because of their skills. But we all get along. And again, in the other store, it was small. We had to get along because it was a very small kitchen. So we all had to get along, and it was very important. This kitchen's a little bit different. But we still... You have to, when you have a bunch of women together, you have to get along.
Yeah, it's like that.
So, that's right. It's the same thing. And it's fun. As I say, if they aren't a fun-loving group, then it's not. There's no point in coming to work.
You are listening to Radio Free School.
What skills do we need? Well, we all have different skills. We all obviously know how to bake or to cook. I'm not a cake decorator, but I am learning some of the skills of the cake decorators. But I have 2 very talented cake decorators who are teaching the rest of us some tricks. And they have to be able to do that. They have to be able to do it quickly. You have to know how to have your way around a kitchen. But the young teenagers that I hire, I always hire 2 teenagers, and they start off in grade 9, and they... Almost all of them have lasted right through to grade 13 with us, and I enjoy that. And by the time they're finished here, we've taught them enough that they know their way around a kitchen. And they all know how to make cookies or whatever, and sometimes they don't know what a cookie looks like when it's done or whatever coming out of the oven, but by the time they're finished, they do. So the skills, we're not pastry chefs. We don't have pastry chef papers or anything else because it's all home baking. It's not fancy stuff. But our cakes are beautiful. The girls do a beautiful job with the cakes, and they're all good. And, you know, there's stuff that you can eat. Sometimes if something's pretty, it can't be eaten.
I just wanted to know what makes you different from most of those, like, you know.
We're home-baked. We're not out of a box. A lot of stuff comes from big bakeries, and we use good ingredients. We use top-quality ingredients. We do everything by hand, and I think that's the difference. So you get stuff from AMP, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it's processed. It's made at bake shops that are great big factories, and it's just not the same. And you can't, it's very expensive to do this, so not everybody can certainly take the time to do it like this. I always have the expression, milk comes from plastic bags. People go into an A&P or a Fortino's or wherever, they go in and they expect a cake to be on the counter. We can't always guarantee that we're going to have something here. If you really want something, you have to order it here to make sure you're going to get it, because I can't promise that we're going to have time to make that cake. So that's what makes us different. The atmosphere, a lot of times they come in because of the atmosphere. We're friendly. We'll lend an ear if somebody wants to talk. Most often, unless it's a busy Saturday morning or something. It's fun to sit at the tables and watch the people. I see when they go into the dentist, nobody ever wants to go into a dentist, but they all come in here and they all go, oh, wow, you know, like, what am I going to pick? Even if they're not supposed to eat it, and the doctors in town hate us, of course, with cholesterol and gaining weight and everything else, but they come in, even if they're not supposed to have a goodie, they can always have one little goodie. A little bit of what you like is always good for you, so...
Okay, let's go get some bakery noises of you guys eating something.
Okay.
For yours, I can actually eat piles.
Okay. Chicken pie.
I don't know. More and more. Yeah.
We just ordered our birthday cake from
the weekend. Oh, did you?
We'll see you on Saturday.
Yeah, bye bye. Yes. Can I help you pull up some chairs?
Oh, you.
I mean,
cupcake.
Well, it's got chocolate, and then the chocolate icing, and then it's got a little pink rose on top of the leaf.
Sweet leaf.
Very good.
Eva has a yellow one.
A yellow rose.
Chocolate icing. It's chocolate.
Chocolate sprinkles.
And a wrapper.
Yeah. Looks delicious. So.
Very good.
What do you like about this bakery?
Everything. It's old fashioned. It's really nice. I like old fashioned things.
I like everything about it.
How about the cakes? What kind of cakes have they got?
Some are pink with roses on them. And yellow with roses on them. They look pretty good.
Have you had any of the bread?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
It's good.
Oh, Mommy, by the way, they have brownies over there as well.
Do they have brownies?
You should get some
brownies.
Everybody else is.
Sonny, what do you like anything about this bakery?
I kind of like the... I like the building. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
We've got food hanging, there's a bike.
An old-fashioned bike.
Yeah.
And your old-fashioned toys. Mm-hmm. Old-fashioned stuff. I guess I'm going to have another banana muffin.
What did you just eat?
I had a raspberry tart. Someone shoot me.
Is it so good?
Yeah, it was tasty. Yeah. Very nice, crispy and crunchy and flaky crust. Flaky pie crust. I'm going to have a sip of my fair trade coffee. Yeah.
On CFMU.
George's Marvelous Medicine, Roald Dahl. Chapter 1, Grammar.
Illustrations by Quentin Blake.
Of course, illustrations by Quentin Blake. I'm going shopping in the village, George's mother said to George on Saturday morning. So be a good boy and don't get into mischief. This was a silly thing to say to a small boy at any time. It immediately made him wonder what sort of mischief he might get into. And don't forget to give Grandma her medicine at 11 o'clock, the mother said. Then out she went, closing the back door behind her. Grandma, who was dozing in her chair by the window, opened one wicked little eye and said,
Now you heard what your mother said, George. Don't forget my medicine.
No, Grandma.
And just try to behave yourself for once while she's away.
Yes, Grandma.
George was bored to tears. He didn't have a brother or a sister. His father was a farmer, and the farm they lived on was miles away from anywhere, so there were never any children to play with. He was tired of staring at pigs and hens and cows and sheep. He was especially tired of having to live in the same house as that grisly old grunion of grandma. Looking after her all by himself was hardly the most exciting way to spend a Saturday morning.
You can make me a nice cup of tea for a start. That'll keep you out of mischief for a few minutes.
Yes, Grandma.
George couldn't help disliking Grandma. She was a selfish, grumpy old woman. She had pale brown teeth and a small puckered-up mouth like a dog's bottom.
How much sugar in your tea today, Grandma?
1 spoonful. And no milk.
Most grandmothers are lovely, kind, helpful old ladies, but not this one. She spent all day and every day sitting in her chair by the window, and she was always complaining, grousing, grouching, grumbling, griping about something or other. Never once, even on her best days, had she smiled at George and said,
"Well, how are you this morning, George?" Or, "Why don't you and I have a game of snakes and ladders?" Or, "How was school today?"
She didn't seem to care about other people, only about herself. She was a miserable old grouch. George went into the kitchen and made Grandma a cup of tea with a teabag. He put 1 spoon of sugar in it and no milk. He stirred the sugar well and carried the cup into the living room. Grandma sipped the tea.
"It's not sweet enough. Put more sugar in it."
George took the cup back to the kitchen and added another spoonful of sugar. He stirred it again and carried it carefully in to Grandma.
"Where's the saucer? I won't have a cup without a saucer."
George fetched her a saucer.
"And what about a teaspoon, if you please?"
"I've stirred it for you, Grandma. I stirred it well."
"I'll stir my own tea, thank you very much. Fetch me a teaspoon."
George fetched her a teaspoon. When George's mother or father was home, Grandma never ordered George about like this. It was only when she had him on her own that she began treating him badly.
"You know what's the matter with you?" the old woman said, staring at George over the rim of the teacup with those bright, wicked little eyes. "You're growing too fast. Boys who grow too fast become stupid and lazy."
"I can't help it if I'm growing fast, Grandma."
"Of course you can. Growing is a nasty, childish habit."
"But we have to grow, Grandma. If we don't grow, we'd never be grown-ups."
"Rubbish, boy, rubbish. Look at me. Am I growing? Certainly not."
"But you did once, Grandma."
"Only a very little. I gave up growing when I was extremely small, along with all the other nasty childish habits like laziness and disobedience and greed and sloppiness and untidiness and stupidity. You haven't given up of any of these things, have you?"
"I'm only a little boy, Grandma."
"You're 8 years old, she snorted. "That's old enough to know better. If you don't stop growing soon, it will be too late."
"Too late for what, Grandma?"
"It's ridiculous. You're nearly as tall as me already."
George took a good look at Grandma. She certainly was a very tiny person.
"Daddy says it's fine for a man to be tall."
"Don't listen to your daddy. Listen to me."
"But how do I stop myself growing?"
"Eat less chocolate."
"Does chocolate make you grow?"
"It makes you grow the wrong way," she snapped. "Up instead of down."
Grandma sipped some tea, but never took her eyes from the little boy who stood before her.
"Never grow up. Always down."
"Yes, Grandma."
"And stop eating chocolate. Eat cabbage instead."
"Cabbage? Oh, no, I don't like cabbage."
"It's not what you like or what you don't like. It's what's good for you. That counts. From now on, you must eat cabbage 3 times a day. Mountains of cabbage. And if it's got caterpillars in it, so much the better." "Caterpillars give you brains," the old woman said.
"Mommy washes them down the sink."
"Mummy's as stupid as you are. Cabbage doesn't taste of anything without a few boiled caterpillars in it. Slugs, too."
"Not slugs. I couldn't eat slugs."
"Whenever I see a live slug on a piece of lettuce," Grandma said, "I gobble it up quick before it crawls away. Delicious, delicious. Worms and slugs and beetly bugs. You don't know what's good for you. Beetles are perhaps the best of all. They go crunch."
"Grandma, that's beastly."
The old hag grinned, showing those pale brown teeth.
"If you're lucky, you get a beetle inside a stem of celery. That's what I like."
"Grandma, how could you?"
You find all sorts of nice things in sticks of raw celery, the old woman went on. Sometimes it's earwigs.
I don't want to hear about it.
George started edging toward the door. He wanted to get as far away as possible from this filthy old woman.
You're trying to get away from me, aren't you? Pointing a finger straight at George's face. You're trying to get away from Grandma.
Little George stood by the door, staring at the old hag in the chair. She stared back at him. Could it be, George wondered, that she was a witch?
Come closer to me, little boy, she said, beckoning to him with a horny finger. Come closer to me, and I will tell you secrets. I know a great many secrets. And suddenly she smiled. It was a thin, icy smile. The kind of snake might make, but just before it bites you.
George took a step backward, edging closer to the door.
Some of us, she said. And all at once, she was leaning forward in her chair and whispering in a throaty sort of voice. George had never heard her use this before. Some of us have magic powers that can twist the creatures of this earth into wondrous shapes.
A tingle of electricity flashed down the length of George's spine. He began to feel frightened. George took an enormous stewing pot out of the cupboard and placed it on the kitchen table.
George!
Came the shrill voice from the next room.
What are you doing?
Nothing, Grandma.
You needn't think I can't hear you. Just because you closed the door, you're rattling pots and pans.
I'm just tidying the kitchen, Grandma.
Then there was a silence. George had absolutely no doubts whatsoever about how he's going to make his famous medicine. He wasn't going to fall about wondering whether to put in a little bit of this or a little bit of that. Quite simply, he was going to put in everything he could find. There would be no messing about, no hesitating, no wondering whether a particular thing would knock the old girl sideways or not. The rule would be this. Whatever he saw, if it was runny or powdery or gooey, in it went. Nobody had ever made a medicine like that before. If it didn't actually cure Grandma, then it would anyway cause some exciting results. It would be worth watching. George decided to work his way around the various rooms one at a time and see what they had to offer. He would go first to the bathroom. There are always lots of funny things in a bathroom, so upstairs he went, carrying the enormous two-handled pot before him. In the bathroom, he gazed longingly at the famous and dreaded medicine cupboard, but he didn't go near it. It was the only thing in the entire house he was forbidden to touch. He had made solemn promises to his parents about this, and he wasn't going to break them. There were things in there, they had told him, that could actually kill a person, and although he was out to give Grandmother a pretty fiery mouthful, he didn't really want a dead body on his hands. George put the stew pot on the floor and went to work. Number one was a bottle labelled Golden Gloss Hair Shampoo. He emptied it into the pot.
That ought to wash her tummy nice and clean.
He took a full tube of toothpaste and squeezed out the whole lot of it in one long worm.
Maybe that will brighten up those horrid brown teeth of hers.
There was an aerosol can of super foam shaving soap belonging to his father. George loved playing with aerosols. He pressed the button and kept his finger on it until there was nothing left. A wonderful mountain of white foam built up in the giant pot. With his fingers, he scooped out the contents of a jar of vitamin-enriched face cream. In went the small bottle of scarlet nail polish.
If the toothpaste doesn't clean her teeth, then this will paint them as red as roses.
He found another jar of creamy stuff labelled hair remover. Smear it on your legs, it said, and allow to remain for 5 minutes. George tipped it all into the pot. There was a bottle with yellow stuff inside it called Dishworth's Famous Dandruff Cure. In it went. There was something called Brie Don for cleaning false teeth. It was a white powder. In that went too. He found another aerosol can. Nevermore Ponging deodorant spray. Guaranteed, it said, to keep away unpleasant body odours for a whole day.
She could use plenty of that,
George said as he sprayed the entire canful into the stewing pot. Liquid paraffin, the next one was called. It was a big bottle. He hadn't the faintest idea what it did to you, but he poured it in anyway. That, he thought, looking around him, was about all from the bathroom. On his mother's dressing table in the bedroom, George found yet another lovely aerosol can. It was called Helga's Hair Set. Hold 12 inches away from the hair and spray lightly. He squirted the whole lot in the pot. There was a bottle of perfume called Flowers of Turnips. It smelled of old cheese. In it went. And in too went a large round box of powder that was called Pink Plaster. There was a powder puff on top, and he threw that in as well for luck. He found a couple of lipsticks. The bedroom had nothing more to offer, so George carried the enormous pot downstairs again and trotted into the laundry room, where the shelves were full of all kinds of household items. The first one he took down was a large box of super white for automatic washing machines. Dirt, it said, would disappear like magic. George didn't know whether Grandma was automatic or not, but she was certainly a dirty old woman.
So she'd better have it all, he said, tipping in the whole box full.
Then there was a big can of Waxwell floor polish. It removes filth and foul messes from your floor and leaves everything shiny bright, it said. George scooped the orange-coloured waxy stuff out of the can and plunked it into the pot. There was a round cardboard carton labelled flea powder for dogs. Keep well away from the dog's food, it said, because this powder, if eaten, will make the dog explode.
Good, said George, pouring it all into the stewing pot.
He found a box of canary seed on the shelf.
Perhaps it'll make the old birds sing, he said.
Next, George explored the box of shoe cleaning materials, brushes and cans, polishing cloths. Well, now, he thought, Grandma's medicine is brown, so my medicine must also be brown, or she'll smell of rat. The way to colour it, he decided, would be with brown shoe polish. On his way back to the kitchen, George saw a bottle of gin standing on the sideboard. Grandma was very fond of gin. She was allowed to have a small nip of it every evening. Now he would give her a treat. He would pour in the whole bottle. He did. Back in the kitchen, George put the huge stewing pot on the table and went over to the cupboard that served as a larder. The shelves were bulging with bottles and jars of every sort. He chose the following and emptied them one by one into the pot. A tin of curry powder, a tin of mustard powder, a bottle of extra hot chili sauce, a tin of black peppercorns, a bottle of horseradish sauce.
There, that should do it.
George!
Came the screechy voice from the next room.
Who are you talking to in there? What are you up to?
Nothing, Grandma. Absolutely nothing, he called back.
Is it time for my medicine yet?
No, Grandma. Not for about half an hour.
Well, just see you don't forget it.
I won't, Grandma. I promise I won't.
At this point, George suddenly had an extra good wheeze. Although the medicine cupboard in the house was forbidden ground, what about the medicines his father kept on the shelf in the shed next to the hen house? The animal medicines? What about those? Nobody ever told him he mustn't touch them. Let's face it, George said to himself, hairspray and shaving cream and shoe polish are all very well, and they will no doubt cause some splendid explosions inside the old geezer. But what the magic mixture now needs is a touch of the real stuff, real pills and real tonics to give it a punch and muscle. George picked up the heavy three-quarters full pot, carried it out the back door. He crossed the farmyard and headed straight for the shed alongside the hen house. He knew his father wouldn't be there. He was out haymaking in one of the meadows. George entered the dusty old shed and put the stewing pot on the bench. Then he looked up at the medicine shelf. There were five big bottles there. Two were full of pills, two were full of runny stuff, and one was full of powder.
I'll use them all. Grandma needs them. Boy, does she need them.
The first bottle he took down contained an orange-coloured powder. The label said, for chickens with foul pest, hen gripe, sore beaks, gammy legs, cockerellitis, egg trouble, broodiness or loss of feathers. Mix one spoonful only with each bucket of feed.
Well, George said aloud to himself as he tipped the whole bottle full, the old bird won't be losing any feathers after she's had a dose of this.
The next bottle he took down had about 500 gigantic purple pills in it. For horses with hoarse throats, it said on the label, the hoarse-throated horse should suck one pill twice a day.
Grandma may not have a hoarse throat, but she's certainly got a sharp tongue. Maybe they'll cure that instead.
Into the pot went the 500 gigantic purple pills. Then there was a bottle of thick yellowish liquid for cows, bulls and bullocks, the label said. Will cure cowpox, cowmangy, crumpled horns, bad breath and balls, earache, toothache, headache, hoofache, tailache, and sore udders.
That grumpy old cow in the living room has every one of those rotten illnesses. She'll need it all.
With a slop and a gurgle, the yellow liquid splashed into the now nearly full stew pot. The next bottle contained a brilliant red liquid. Sheep dip, it said on the label, for sheep with sheep rot and for getting rid of ticks and fleas. Mix one spoonful in 1 gallon of water and slosh it over the sheep. Caution, do not make the mixture any stronger or the wood will fall out and the animal will be naked.
By gum, said George. How I'd love to walk in and slosh it all over Grandma and watch the ticks and fleas go jumping off her. But I can't and I mustn't, so she'll have to drink it instead.
He poured the bright red medicine in the pot. The last bottle on the shelf was full of pale green pills. Pig pills, the label announced.
Ugh.
For pigs with pork prickles, tender trotters, bristle blight, and swine sickness. Give one pill per day. In severe cases, 2 pills may be given, but more than that will make the pig rock and roll.
Just the stuff for that miserable old pig back there in the house. She'll need a very big dose. He tipped all the green pills, hundreds and hundreds of them, into the stewing pot. The end!
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.